I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. It is crunch time in Harrisburg as the budget deadline approaches. The Republican-controlled legislature and the Democratic governor are still wrangling over how to find money for the budget shortfall and agree on how to pay for programs and services for the next fiscal year. It's also Groundhog Day because we have been here before, a partisan showdown over tax hikes, spending cuts, and finding new sources of revenue. Much of the negotiations has been behind closed doors. We asked Katie Meyer to join us to tell us what's on the table, where the parties and players disagree, and who is calling the shots. She is State Capitol Bureau Chief for WHYY and other public radio stations in Pennsylvania. And Katie Meyer, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
So how did we end up with a $1.5 billion shortfall this year?
Well, there's a lot of reasons. Basically, and so this is for this fiscal year, by the way. So this
right.
current budget came up $1.5 billion short. And a lot of it was because of low revenues. So our sales tax, our personal income tax, corporate net income tax all came up lower than expected. And so that, I mean, in a lot of ways, that can't be predicted. A lot of states saw very low revenues this year. But Pennsylvania also did have some budgeting issues that fed into the deficit. One of the big ones, I think one of the most egregious ones, was lawmakers put into last year's budget a $100 million appropriation that was supposed to be paid for by a gambling expansion. That expansion never happened. It was never passed. And so that $100 million goes into the deficit. You know, there are other shortfalls that happened, certain funds that don't come through. So, you know, it all kind of
you know,
it pools together and it becomes $1.5 billion. And that's the largest deficit we've seen since the recession.
So do they have to come up with $1.5 billion before Friday night at midnight, or can they kick the can down the road, or what?
Well, so they have to come up with more than 1.5, because the 1.5 is just like, that's, you know, it's like two steps backward, one step forward. We have to fill in this year's deficit and then balance out spending for next year. So what that's going to entail, they're looking at maybe one-time revenues, so possibly borrowing against a state fund revenue for the last in the coming years to pay for that 1.5. And then we don't have a spend number for this budget, the next budget yet. But they're looking at maybe $700 or $800 million more that they're going to have to fill in for that. So that's going to have to be, you know, recurring revenue if we want to have a healthy budget. And so we're not totally sure where all of that is going to come from yet.
I just thought of the word yikes. I mean, you know, but as I said, this is a kind of a Groundhog Day situation in that we have been here before. Now, earlier this year, the governor came up with a budget for what, 32 point something billion dollars?
$32.3 was his proposal, which was higher than the House and Senate Republicans wanted to go. But that was seen as a very austere budget. It proposed some program cuts. Specifically, he wanted to consolidate four major health departments, and that would have saved some money. He also did propose $1 billion in new taxes, the biggest of which would have been a severance tax on natural gas drilling, and that's gone over very badly with the Republican majorities. They do not want to do that. It seems like it's sort of a non-starter. So the House answered that with its own budget proposal, which was much lower. It was $31.5 billion. So that's sort of seen as the floor, the lowest possible number. And the likely number will be between those two. We haven't heard a definite one yet, but we're looking at probably 31.8 or 9, which is, again, a more austere budget than the governor wanted, a little bit more spending than the House wanted. But yeah, it's a low spend number.
It's interesting because it looks like the Republicans are looking at increasing, you have mentioned increasing gambling, but increasing gambling at bars video games, things like that. What's the thinking behind that, and what kind of revenue could we be talking about?
Sure. So yes, this is the main revenue proposal, the main proposal for new revenue, new recurring revenue that the state has right now that we've heard about. So the House a couple of weeks ago passed sort of an omnibus gaming bill, a gaming expansion bill that, among other things, it would expand, it would legalize internet gaming, which is a big one that the Senate also agrees on. But it would also legalize video gaming terminals called VGTs, colloquially. And that would, as you said, that would allow video gaming gambling terminals in bars, taverns, pretty much anywhere with a liquor license. And that has been a very contentious issue. That's sort of the biggest sticking point on revenues that we can see right now. The Senate hasn't had the votes to legalize VGTs in the past, and they're working on it. I think the Senate is sort of trying to come around to maybe a compromise on that, but we've heard a few specifics coming out of there. VGTs may be a component of the new gaming expansion, but that won't cover the entire new spend. It's probably going to get us about $200 billion in the next year, maybe more in subsequent years. So it looks like they're going to have to come up with something else as well.
Drinking and gambling. That's what we're relying on.
Drinking. So we have seen some different proposals on expanding liquor as well, but the House has wanted to do that, the Senate not so much. So we will see if that goes anywhere. And what exactly it looks like.
Absolutely. Let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Katie Meyer, a very familiar voice here at WHYY. She is State Capitol Bureau Chief for WHYY and all the other public radio stations in Pennsylvania, giving us the latest on the fight over the budget. And, of course, the fiscal year ends this Friday, I should say, at midnight.
Yeah.
And you can join the conversation calling us at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and tweet us at @WHYYRadioTimes. Privatizing liquor sales is also another perennial issue here in the Commonwealth. Is that under discussion at all?
In the House, it has been. The House has passed a bill. It's passed several bills that would go, to various extents, privatizing the liquor industry. Obviously, last year, that was sort of the major budget component that we saw. It's been a little bit of a non-starter in the Senate. They've been extremely lukewarm to the idea. It's not certain if the revenues that are projected from that privatization would, in fact, be as high as they're being projected as. So, it's that's something we have heard less about.
Interesting. Pennsylvania has a sizable, older, aging population. How does that drive costs?
Well, it drives costs because it gives us really sort of lump sum human services costs that are very difficult to pay down. We have, I think, the third, maybe the fourth most people over 65 in the nation. Retirees don't pay income tax on their retirement income. So that's one of the reasons why we have such a high population. Also, just like demographically, we have more. So what that does is it raises costs specifically, coming from people who are in nursing homes. So elderly people in nursing homes, Medicaid is paying for that. It's a big cost driver for the state, and it's very difficult to kick old people out of nursing homes to save money. Some may say, really shouldn't do that. So that is a big expense that's difficult to get rid of. The other large expense that we have is pension payments. We have a $70 billion unfunded pension liability, and we do have to pay into that every year if we want that debt to go down. So, we're paying that off over 30 years or so. So that's another tough one that it's difficult to work around.
Is there discussion about education spending? And I ask that, obviously, calling you from Philadelphia here,
right?
But Philadelphia, not the only district that has been crying poverty, frankly, laying off teachers and other employees working in schools, cutting back on programs and services. How much is that, you think, at play in Harrisburg?
It's certainly talked about quite frequently. Governor Wolf has made this a big issue in his rhetoric surrounding budget spending. He's asked for $100 million, increase in education spending, and it appears that the legislature, the Republicans in the legislature, are on board. Again, we haven't seen any spending numbers yet. We don't know how much total they're going to spend, and we don't know on what they will spend. But, as far as we know, there's going to be some increase in education spending. Now, I should note, not as much as many schools, Philadelphia schools and otherwise, have wanted, but an increase nonetheless.
I'm curious about the role of the Democrats in the House and the Senate. The Republicans have a sizable majority in both branches of government. We have a Democratic governor. Are they kind of sidelined or bystanders, or are they participants in this whole process?
They are sidelined. I mean, they really don't have much legislative power. They don't have the power to stop major portions of the budget or stop certain ideas from passing just because they don't have the numbers. So Democrats have really been taking the position of putting their opinions out there. They would like to see tax increases. They'd like to see a severance tax on natural gas specifically. But it's mostly them saying, like, this is our position, but there's not a whole lot they can do to make that come true, as it were. A lot of them are talking about, like, we'll have this budget that's passed and then maybe retroactively lobbying for more money in certain areas. But they are... they don't have too much power in either in the House or the Senate. There's a Republican supermajority in the Senate.
We're going to be talking with the Auditor General, Eugene DePasquale, in just a couple of minutes. And one of the things that he has identified as a source of money is recreational marijuana. I know Senator Daylen Leach has also identified that as a source of revenue. And this is not the first time for Senator Leach. How does that play out in the legislature?
So this has been sort of a pet issue for Senator Leach. And as you said, he's proposed it in many years, and it's never gotten anywhere. I don't believe it's going to get anywhere in the short term. I've asked other senators, other Democratic senators in Leach's own chamber. I talked to Senate Vince Hughes, who's a prominent senator there. And he he laughed. He said, no, that's not going to happen.
Really?
There's still, I think we're a long way from recreational marijuana legalization in Pennsylvania. That's, that's what you hear. But then again, things can change quickly. And, it obviously, a new industry for the state would be a revenue driver. So there's no way around that. It's just rallying the support for recreational marijuana is going to be very difficult in a conservative state, socially conservative and, fiscally conservative state like Pennsylvania.
Katie, about a minute before we have to say goodbye to you. And Governor Wolf's first budget, I don't think he signed it until about 9 months after the deadline. What are your thoughts about this approaching deadline? Are they going to make it?
I don't think they're going to have a 9-month standoff again. What looks like is going to happen is what happened last year, where the assembly will pass a spending plan and put that on the governor's desk, and then they will put the revenue plan to actually balance that through later on. So Governor Wolf didn't sign the budget last year. He just let it lapse into law. That may happen again. We don't know. We don't know what their schedule is going to look like, and that's going to really determine what happens here.
And a lot of stuff happening behind closed doors. Do you have your ear to the keyhole to hear what's going on?
Always, always. Anytime a leader from either party comes out, we're all there with our microphones.
Well, Katie Meyer, thanks so much for getting our conversation started. Thanks for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And that's Katie Meyer, State Capitol Bureau Chief for WHYY and the other public radio stations in Pennsylvania. And yes, we have waiting in the wings Pennsylvania Auditor General Eugene DePasquale. Stay with us. Call us 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times to join the conversation. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. We were just talking with Katie Meyer about the budget fight in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, as the next fiscal year fast approaches, and one sticking point is finding new sources of revenue. Our guest, Pennsylvania Auditor General Eugene DePasquale, has an idea: legalize, regulate, and tax recreational marijuana. He looked at states where pot is legal and says it could be a real source of real money for the Commonwealth. A Franklin and Marshall poll found that 56% of residents said marijuana should be legal. This is a change from previous polls. And Pennsylvania legalized medical marijuana last year. Is recreational marijuana next? Eugene DePasquale joins us on Radio Times. Nice to have you back on the show.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
How much money could be raised if we were to legalize recreational marijuana in Pennsylvania?
Colorado, which is a state about 40% the size of Pennsylvania, brought in $129 million last year. So my, you know, just when you sketch it out, if we're to, and I've sort of suggested that we model our law based on Colorado for a whole host of reasons of the eight total states that have gone in this direction, I think it's a minimum of $200 million on the conservative side. On the more optimistic side, it would be about $300 million.
And how long have you supported this idea?
It was, I would say I came out with it this spring. It was something that I've been debating back and forth for the last couple years. My public position was, let's see how the other states that have legalized it go before I would make any final decision. And then I looked at the evidence of what happened in the states that have legalized it. And I think it, you know, on the net side, it's a positive. So that's why I made the decision to go in this direction.
I'm looking at a press release from Colorado. It's pretty highly taxed, I have to say, for retail marijuana, as they call it. There's a 2.9% sales tax. There's a 10% special sales tax and a 15% excise tax. Are those the taxes you would be looking at for Pennsylvania?
That would be correct. Something along those lines. Obviously, that would be up to the legislature and the governor to negotiate the specifics. But I believe from how they regulate it to how they license it to how they sell it. And also, when I look at the bigger picture of it, of the societal side of this, which is it was one of the states where teen usage actually dropped after it was legalized. So for all of those reasons, and I just think it's a saner way to go about this policy position. Is it just about the money? Look, it certainly, as we know, in our state budget right now, with the nearly $2 to $3 billion deficit that the legislature and the governor are facing, $200 to $300 million would be a nice added addition to that. Does it solve the whole problem? Absolutely not. But I think before you even get to just the money side of it, it's a saner way to go about how we deal with marijuana.
Have you, I'm looking at a couple of quotes, one from the governor saying the Commonwealth is not ready for legalized pot for recreation. Senator Dalen Leach, as you know, has proposed this idea for a number of years now, but he's gotten very little, essentially no traction right in the legislature. How are you going to make, how do you make that argument that would win people over, especially in this, what I would say, rather conservative state?
Well, I would say it when you define it, the legislature is certainly conservative. And look, the state as a political whole swings back and forth. So it, as we say, you know, it's a very moderate state. You know, presidential years maybe leans a little bit more Democratic. But beyond that, I think this is an issue on a saner drug policy, specifically saner marijuana laws, that cuts well beyond ideological lines. I mean, I know a lot of people that voted for Donald Trump that believe that how we go about dealing with marijuana just doesn't make any sense. And the same thing with people that are on the left that were Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders supporters. So I think this is an issue that cuts well beyond ideology. And when you look at the Franklin and Marshall poll, you know, 56%, the opposition was shrinking. The most interesting part of that poll was not so much the 56% in support, which obviously shows it's more than just Democrats and liberals, but also the hard opposition is shrinking rapidly.
In fact, I'm looking at it going back to 2006, just 22% of Pennsylvanians thought it should be legalized. And as you mentioned, 56% now. So in the last 10 years, a pretty dramatic jump.
I view it from a political stance. I'm not equating it on the same policy, but on the political side of it, it has very similar demographic shifts to what happened with marriage equality, which is regardless of one's political party, younger voters are overwhelmingly in this direction, similar to marriage equality. You know, they were, you know, younger voters were well ahead of the curve in 2004 and 2006. I see the same thing happening with the marijuana issue, that I think younger voters are really driving this beyond party label.
Let me get some callers in and some comments as well. That's Pennsylvania's Auditor General, Eugene DePasquale. We're talking about an idea he has, and he publicized it a couple of months ago, which is legalize, regulate, and tax recreational marijuana. He says there is money in that, real money in that, and that could help the Commonwealth find money for the budget. And there is a shortfall this year of $1.5 billion, just to put that into some context. You can call us at 1-888 888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me get Andrew from, looks like Morrisville, to join us on Radio Times. Andrew, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Marty. I agree with the Auditor General that it's a rich source of revenue, especially since that Pennsylvania already has a liquor distribution established, so that would help. And also, it would cut criminal justice costs, free up police to fight violent crime. So I think it's a very good idea.
Fair enough. Thanks for calling into Radio Times. You want to expand on that, Eugene DePasquale, the idea that, as you mentioned, and I think a lot of people would agree with you, that the war on drugs has been a costly failure on many fronts. Have you looked at the savings? If we're not locking up people that are using marijuana or arresting them, have you looked at the potential savings there?
Well, short answer is yes. Now, broadly speaking, I say this not to try to be flip about it. The most failed war in the history of the United States is the war on drugs. I mean, we have botched this at every level. And you could say that the way we've gone about this has made the problem actually worse, not better. Just Philadelphia alone, just by decriminalizing marijuana, saved $4 million a year. So when I talk about on the conservative side of bringing in $200 million, that's not talking about all the money that's being saved by county court systems by not trying to throw people in jail for this. So there are significant savings go along with the additional tax revenue. But I also come back to the broader point. I think it's just a better way to go about how we manage the issue of marijuana. I mean, hopefully I'm not, you know, giving some earth-shattering news here today when I say people smoke marijuana. And that's going to continue to happen. And should we make it a crime, or should we just try to regulate and tax it in the same way we've done with alcohol, which I think, you know, well, prohibition failed. There's a reason why prohibition was repealed. I think we're in a similar place when it comes to how we deal with marijuana.
But do you want sort of the way that the government in Pennsylvania sells, controls liquor? Do you want then the government in Pennsylvania selling, controlling marijuana?
No, I think it would be better done by the private sector, similar to the regulatory process that's in Colorado, where you would have people applying. They have to go through background checks. They would get business licenses. Then they would sell it at dispensaries. I think that's a better way to go.
We are doing that with medical marijuana. I mean, it's not operational at all, but certainly dispensaries have been identified and growers. Is that the model that you think could work in Pennsylvania?
I think that would be the model to build upon, yes.
I mean, it's not done yet. Are we jumping the gun here in terms of using that as a model, since we're still in the sort of shaking out process?
Well, if you're asking me, do I think that we're ready to have this thing totally being ready to be sold tomorrow, the answer would be yes, jumping the gun. But obviously that's not going to happen, since it hasn't even been legalized by the legislature.
Right.
But I do think that would be the base to build upon. Obviously, when you have the medicinal side, and you'd have a process to build from there. But Colorado has already done this, and I think, you know, what we should really do is, if the legislature and the governor want to go in this direction, is really do a deep dive on exactly how they did it and try to incorporate as much of that into Pennsylvania as possible.
Let me see what Shane from Mullica Hill has to say. Shane, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. Thanks for taking the call.
You're
welcome. I want to preface with this research being a bit inconsistent, but there have been several studies, specifically in Colorado, stating that the use of marijuana and the legalization has increased the number of car accidents. I wanted to get your guest's take on that, what Pennsylvania specifically would do to counter that.
No, it's a good question, Shane. I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Go ahead, Eugene.
First of all, driving under the influence, whether it be alcohol or marijuana, you know, is illegal. And one of the challenges that we do have, and I have met with law enforcement on this issue, that is, right now we have good testing devices for when people have alcohol. They have not quite perfected it when it comes to marijuana. So that's something that the sooner we get that technology foolproof, the better off. But certainly there's no question that people shouldn't be driving under the influence, whether it be marijuana or alcohol.
And again, talking with Pennsylvania's Auditor General, Eugene DePasquale, about an idea he has to legalize, regulate, and tax recreational marijuana in Pennsylvania, a way to raise revenue and decrease costs. And you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY. Radio Times. It's interesting because I'm talking to you from Philadelphia, where the city has essentially said if you're carrying small amounts of marijuana, it's not going to be a great big deal. Do you see this more as a grassroots campaign rather than going through the legislature in Harrisburg?
I think what you're going to see, similar to workplace safety efforts that were done in the early 90s, which was making it that if you were gay and lesbian, you couldn't be fired from work. And that was happening city by city across Pennsylvania. You know, it still hasn't actually been passed by the Pennsylvania legislature, but certainly society and many corporations and businesses have incorporated those protections. I do think that this is going to be a municipality by municipality effort. And I think, you know, Pittsburgh State College and other cities along with Philadelphia have either moved or are moving in this direction. And I think that's only going to continue to grow in the years ahead if the legislature doesn't act.
What more can you do to sell this idea, especially to the governor, to the legislature?
I think the most important thing at this stage, look, they know my position. I do think that as they continue to grapple with budget deficit, look, they're now talking about this idea of simply borrowing $1 billion to make it seem as if the budget is balanced. What would be a more effective way to do it? That or actually bring in real revenue and develop real businesses and create real jobs? I mean, to me, it's a no-brainer. But having said that, I realize it's very unlikely to happen as part of this budget settlement. So I think for me going forward, it's people need to run for the legislature. Cities need to decriminalize. Voters need to make sure their legislators are aware that 56% that supports this, it's time for them to speak up. And certainly from younger voters, it's time to organize your college campuses, organize communities all over Pennsylvania, similar to what happened with President Obama when he first won in 2008. It may take that level of a grassroots campaign.
Let me get Charlotte from Pennsylvania to join us. Charlotte, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, when calculating revenue, do you take into account pot tourism?
And I know that's been a draw in Colorado and other states that have recreational marijuana. Do you see that as part of the revenue picture, DePasquale?
The short answer is yes, but there's a big depends on that. And the depends is, when do we go? Pennsylvania, if we get out in front of this, I actually think we could end up being on the closer to the $300 million side. However, if we let other states like New Jersey and New York beat us to the punch, so to speak, then I think we'll be much closer to the $200 million mark. It really depends on when we go, because the New Jersey legislature, because right now Governor Christie has said he would veto it, the New Jersey legislature has said that the next governor, regardless of whether it's a Republican or a Democrat, the first bill they're going to get on the desk is regulating and taxing marijuana. Hmm. So if that happens, we won't be the first one. And the further we are behind in line, so to speak, I think the less the possibility exists of us drawing tourism dollars on this as well.
And you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. So in the short term, and we have a couple of days before the start of the new fiscal year, it looks like the legislature is looking at expanding gambling. What do you think about that?
Well, that's at least from the House side. The Senate seems to at least be throwing some cold water on that. First of all, generally speaking, I am not a big gambling advocate. I'm concerned about a lot of issues with it. Having said that, I do think some form of gaming is okay. I mean, I've generally been okay with sports betting. And also table games more so than slots, simply because I view that as sort of a back end tax on the poor. But having said that, look, people are okay with slots, and sometimes you win an argument, sometimes you lose it. As a budgetary issue, though, simply creating more gaming as a way to balance the budget, I'm not sure it will work, because I think you're just going to move gamblers from one gambling activity to another. I don't think we should be doing this, nor would it be good policy to simply just create more gamblers. But I do think some people want to gamble, and having outlets for them is okay, and you tax it and you bring in the revenue. But I think adding more games will simply move the gamblers that already exist from one activity to another. So I'm not convinced it would bring in that much more money.
Let me get Casey from Westchester to join our conversation. Hi, Casey. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I have a question about sort of labor and employment. People who sell marijuana on the black market have been pushed out of the labor market in various ways. So if we legalize marijuana, is that going to push these people to start selling harder and worse drugs? What do we know about that possibility for maybe Colorado and other places that have legalized marijuana?
I appreciate the call, Casey. What do you say to that?
I think when you legalize it, you basically get the bad actors out of the system. Look, there's always going to be a potential for something bad to happen. And I'm not here to tell you that if we regulate and tax marijuana, that this is the nirvana that cures all of society's problems, nor is it deep, dark depression if it doesn't happen. I think on the whole, it is significantly more positive than negative. It doesn't mean that nothing bad will ever, ever happen. There's no such thing as a 100% positive and zero negative. Everything has a plus and a minus. The question is, to what degree is the plus and the minus? Now, when it comes to the black market side of it, there are people, not right now, in Pennsylvania and across the country selling bad stuff as part of their marijuana, and they're bad people and they're selling bad stuff, and it's harming Americans. I believe that if you regulate it and tax it and put it into, you know, licensed businesses, then I think you take more of that bad stuff out of the system. You'll never, I'm not here to tell you it's 100% gone, but I believe that if you have people that are, you know, licensed, you're taxing them, it's how they make their living, it's reputable, it's legal, I think you are going to be much more likely to get more of those bad actors out of the system.
We're almost out of time here. Do you see a lot of money coming in through medical marijuana?
Again, to be determined, but the short answer, I believe, is yes. And as just as a political position, I was 100% in favor of how the legislature and the governor tackled that. I think we were actually, it took longer than I would have liked. To me, this is something that is critical for the health and safety of many Pennsylvanians and other Americans across the country.
On that note, thank you for joining us. Eugene DePasquale, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me back. Looking forward to the next time.
Absolutely. And he's Pennsylvania's Auditor General. And we've been talking about an idea that he floated a couple of months ago, but it has particular resonance today as the Pennsylvania legislature tries to figure out how to balance the budget. And that is to legalize, regulate, and tax recreational marijuana. We're going to be talking about medical marijuana and hemp after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moscowen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Last year, Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf signed a bill legalizing medical marijuana. And this month, the Department of Health selected growers and dispensaries that are scheduled to be operational in 2018. On a related issue, hemp can now be grown in Pennsylvania after an 80-year hiatus, and it looks like almost 20 groups have gotten permits. Sam Wood has been covering all of this for the Philadelphia Inquirer, and he joins us on Radio Times. Nice to have you with us on the show.
Hello, Marty.
How many applications to get involved in medical marijuana did the state have to deal with?
Well, they awarded 12 permits to grow medical marijuana in the state of Pennsylvania. There's been a bit of a firestorm that's erupted after that. Today or tomorrow, they should be announcing permits for 27 dispensaries. Wow. And each one of those permits will allow the people awarded to open three outlets, three different storefronts.
Well, you have an article today about some of these, I guess, growers that are, I guess, the losers, the people whose applications were not accepted, not too happy about the results. What's at stake here?
Well, you know, potentially these each one of these permits has been valued at $40 million apiece. And the
This is for the grower.
For the grower. You know, they've spent a significant amount of money in order to get these, you know, some up to $750,000 apiece. That's a very expensive lottery ticket. So you would expect a lot of sour grapes. And though those sour grapes aren't being made public, we're certainly hearing from them. And it's been kind of amusing.
Well, interesting. I mean, as you said, there's a lot of money here. And it looks like from the growers that you wrote about, these are people that are also doing this in other states that have legalized medical marijuana or probably recreational marijuana.
For the most part, what really surprised me is just the number of what are essentially chains and primarily out of states that you wouldn't normally associate with medical marijuana, like Illinois, you know, along with Colorado. But yeah, you know, many of the big winners are Illinois-based. Who knew?
Who knew? And these are growers. They're going to use, as you said, they're going to use warehouses. This is not going to be growing out into the in the fields of Pennsylvania.
No, I mean, they'll be able to grow hemp outdoors, but not medicinal marijuana. It's very, very tightly controlled. It's a pharmaceutical.
Right.
You know, the hemp is going to be used for fibers and building materials and that kind of thing. But the medical marijuana needs to be very, very tightly controlled. They need to prevent, you know, fungi and bacteria and you know, things getting in the product that could potentially be deleterious to a patient, because that's ultimately what this is supposed to be about, getting medicine to patients.
Any in Philadelphia, any growers in Philadelphia or even this southeast part of Pennsylvania?
In Philadelphia, the growers were shut out, and I think many people were very, very surprised to see that. Two of the strongest candidates, the daughter of Ed Snyder, who ran Comcast Spectacor and, of course, the Flyers, was, you know, a woman-led company with a very diverse group of people behind her, you know, did not get a permit this time around. You know, also, you know, David Tuttleman of the Tuttleman Foundation.
Right. A well-known local
name. Very, very well-known, you know, who actually has a grow operation already in Nevada and, you know, a long track record of producing it. So, but there was no one else who got a Philadelphia permit. The closest are two in Berks County. And, yeah, they were, you know, dozens of people who are looking for the opportunity to grow here in the 7 or 8 county region, which is considered southeastern Pennsylvania.
Do you know why? I mean, this was a decision made by the health department, right? Or maybe
right.
not?
I mean, ultimately, it's supposed to be based on scoring. Of course, there's all kinds of rumors as to why maybe Philadelphia did not get one. I'm not going to go into those. But yeah, it remains a mystery. There is supposed to be a second round of permits to grow awarded. But as we've seen in other states, they don't necessarily, you know, get deployed. I mean, New York, you know, awarded 5 warehouse grow permits. And apparently those 5 who have them say that there isn't enough of a market to be able to take another 5. So here in Pennsylvania, we're supposed to get a total of 25. Whether that will happen or not, you know, is a question.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you, and that is Sam Wood, and he's been writing about the legalization of medical marijuana in Pennsylvania for the Philadelphia Inquirer. He's covered health. He's covered business as well. And we are getting an update now that medical marijuana has been legalized as of last year. The Department of Health selected growers, and we're going to hear more about dispensaries. And we want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. You had an interesting story, Sam, about the fact that a number of banks, credit card companies, even credit unions are not sure how to do business with some of these, I guess, these growers or maybe even dispensaries, because in many ways we're dealing with cash here and cash can make it difficult for some of these transactions. Explain what this is all about.
Well, marijuana in any form remains a Schedule I substance, which means it's absolutely verboten by the federal government. There is supposed to be no trade. I mean, under the Obama administration, they turned a blind eye to cannabis operations within the states as long as they adhere to state laws. But these, you know, many of the banks and the credit card companies are still very wary. I mean, if you get involved and the feds decide to crack down, they could seize all your assets. Right. Nobody wants that to happen.
No, of course. I mean, it's such a curious thing because it's Schedule I the way I believe heroin is considered Schedule I.
Heroin and LSD. Actually, is heroin Schedule I? Yeah, I guess it is.
So it's such a curious thing because on the one hand, this is illegal as far as the federal government is concerned. It's clearly happening in states. It's happening here in Pennsylvania. How do businesses negotiate or navigate this? And you're talking about some of these growers as multi-million-dollar operations.
Right. Well, you know, I can't speak directly to that because I don't think I actually wrote that story. I mean, I've read many of these. They, you know, there are these, I guess, financial cooperatives. There is one that I think is Kind Financial that was based in Philadelphia or has a very strong Philadelphia connection. And there are similar things. They aren't official banks, but they will process your money for you.
How much is security an issue for some of these growers?
Well, you know, it depends on where it is and how the locals feel. I mean, the Pennsylvania grow facilities, you know, when I look at the descriptions, are going to be like tighter than prisons.
Really?
Yeah. But if you go to a place like Garden State Dispensary in Woodbridge, New Jersey, you know, you pull up, it's like, you know, it looks like the old electronics wholesaler that it was. You walk in. You say, I'm here to buy medical marijuana. Here's my card. And they buzz you into a dispensary. And, you know, it's that easy. There's one man with a gun and that's it.
Oh.
And some cameras.
But you're saying things might be tighter in Pennsylvania?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean,
like with razor wire and cameras galore and, you know, big security plans.
Let me get Bill from, looks like Montgomery County to join us. Hi, Bill. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times. Is Bill there?
Yes.
Go ahead, Bill.
Hello.
You're on the air. Go ahead.
Okay. Your previous guest, Mr. DiPasquale, said that there might be an issue with determining cannabinoid intoxication.
Yes.
Ordinarily, alcohol intoxication is determined by a breathalyzer test because alcohol is volatile. Cannabinoids are not. You have to take a blood test, which is an intrusion into a person's body because you have to take blood. Therefore, everything else that's in that person's blood is also subject to analysis. Your current guest is probably better capable of dealing with this particular issue for determining the amount of cannabinoid intoxication and whether that's feasible and if there are legal issues.
I wish I could, but I can't.
I was going to say, I don't think that's going to work for us, Bill, but I appreciate the call to Radio Times. But it does, I think, explain just the complexities of legalizing, whether it's medical marijuana or recreational marijuana, that there are all these sort of details that are involved in all of this.
Yeah, to say the least. There's a lot that's still to be worked out. I mean, there are many parts of the production chain in getting medical marijuana to patients which still haven't been thoroughly addressed in even states which have had programs for a long time, like New York. You know, you need doctors to be able to write recommendations. And the patients need to be able to find the doctors. And you need to get the doctors on board. And in both of these states, you know, unlike for something like OxyContin, they require doctors to take a 4-hour course. I mean, this is a significant hurdle in order to get somebody to prescribe what, you know, is a medicine. You know, ideally, it's a medicine. So how that will work here in the state, I mean, it still needs to be ironed out. The state says that it will release, I don't know whether they should be able to have a course available come November.
Right.
But can you get doctors on board to take it?
That'll be interesting. And with the idea that in 2018, next year, it will be functional or operational or some version of what we've been talking about.
They sure hope so. Although, again, as we've seen in both Maryland and Florida, a few lawsuits will totally put the brakes on the deployment. I mean, the state is adamant. They will be ready in 2018. But you talk to some of the players and they're worried. And this is like outside of the concerns that somebody like Jeff Sessions brings to this game, too.
Our attorney general, who has a much more sort of crackdown version of our justice system.
He is adamantly anti-marijuana.
Right.
And wants to bring back a drug war.
And that, of course, complicates all this. There's so much secrecy. I mean, you mentioned this earlier, but so much secrecy in Pennsylvania, whether it's about the growers or about the dispensaries. I mean, how much have you been able to glean about how the Department of Health or whoever determined who's going to be a grower, who's going to be a dispensary?
Well, you know, there were 30 questions that each one of the applicants had to answer. And, you know, Pennsylvania was very unusual in that 20% of the points went to a diversity requirement and a community impact statement. And, let's just say many people have a different idea of what is constituted by diversity.
Right.
So you had what looked on the surface to be pretty diverse companies that ranked very low, you know, surprisingly, and others that, you know, I guess if you're from a place like Philadelphia or Chester, you look at them and you go, what? This isn't diverse at all. You know, you
get, and we're talking about racial diversity here.
Racial diversity, although the diversity also included like women-owned business or veteran participation or other ethnic backgrounds. I mean, that still remains a major bone of contention. I mean, you know, some have joked, like, do you need to be certified as a black person in order to be considered diverse? Or do you need, I mean, I was joking with one, do you need a gyno to certify that you're a woman?
Really?
Well, you know, is your business certified seems to be much more of a concern than if you actually were. So I had one who, one African-American said, yeah, you know, look, I don't feel like I needed to get, I mean, he was winner, said, I didn't feel like I needed to get certification because I wake up every morning, look in the mirror, and I know I'm black. So there is all of that language about diversity. And, you know, I guess if you have applied for a lot of these things, you know how to write. But, you know, many of these concerns are fairly, you know, many of the losers are still fairly new. The other part is just how ridiculously redacted these applications were that were released to the general public. I mean, it's just sheets of solid black ink with no identifiers on them.
And that's Sam Wood. He's a reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer. And you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. How much is the sort of what or was or is the NIMBY thing, you know, not in my backyard? I don't want a dispensary in my neighborhood. I don't want someone growing marijuana in a warehouse next to me.
There's some of that. I mean, there was a little bit of pushback in Northeast Philadelphia where Lindy Snyder wanted to build. But it was hard to say whether they really understood what she wanted. We know that one of the companies, Pure Pen, which won for a warehouse operation in Allegheny County, you know, there was a story in the Wall Street Journal that said how much the community wanted that.
Oh, interesting.
You know, most of these warehouse facilities are being projected for Act 47 cities. You know, cities that have you know, old steel towns. You know, where you know they're looking for as much economic development as they can get. So it's, I think on the whole, they've been fairly welcomed. I mean, there's been some resistance, but it's mostly political, you know, Byzantine stuff on a very local level.
I'm just curious only because we had the Auditor General on before you, and he was talking about the money that could be made and money revenue for the Commonwealth if we were to legalize recreational marijuana. I think most people feel like we are not there yet, but I'd just be curious about your thoughts about that.
Well,
especially,
you know,
in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, there may be some hyperinflation on values and expectations because these projections, as the, you know, the experts like our columnist Chris Goldstein, who writes Philly 420 for Philly.com, will say, you know, these are all predicated on having a huge patient base. How are you going to guarantee that the patients can access this? And who's going to say if the patients can even afford this? Because it's not going to be covered by insurance. So this could be thousands of dollars coming out of people's pockets every month. And it's still going to be a lot cheaper to get on the underground market.
Oh, interesting. In which case, the Commonwealth gets none of that money if it's on the underground market.
Exactly.
Sam, we're going to end on that note. Thanks for coming in. Thanks for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thanks, Marnie.
You're very welcome. And again, Sam Wood covering medical marijuana, the legalization of medical marijuana in Pennsylvania, and the fact that a number of growers have been selected, dispensaries as well, and what it means for the Commonwealth. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about this program. Adam Staniszewski, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Bilder, John Ahrens, and Trinae Nuri. I'm Marty Moscoe. Thank you so much for joining us.